And now at this point, we delay our swing into the grotto. Raphael left the lock off the grotto so we could get in tonight. But we're going to delay the entrance into the grotto because we're going to take up what I consider a very serious subject, the subject of UFOs. And of course, some people will say, how can you be serious about it? But we hope tonight to delve into some of the facts that have been accumulated about UFOs and show you that it indeed is a serious matter. And without further ado, I would like you to meet once again our guest in the studio, Mr. Bill Donovan. Mr. Donovan, just what is this group that you are a member of called NICAP? Is that correct, NICAP?
That's correct, Bruce. The abbreviations NICAP represent the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena.
This, you say, is a National Investigations Committee. This has nothing to do with the federal government.
That's correct. It's a non-profit fact-finding organization, and it is comprised of volunteer members from the United States and approximately 30 foreign countries. We have about 7,000 associate members and quite a cross-section of society from all 50 states and 30 foreign countries.
Well, what are the type of people who, say, become members of this organization?
Well, they include just about every branch of science and engineering. We have the airline and military pilots, educators, clergymen, and other responsible citizens. And we've been fortunate to have local subcommittees, which have been formed by specially qualified members to make on-the-spot investigations of UFO reports. We like to refer to these things as UFOs and not flying saucers and take them out of the realm of sensationalism.
Then primarily, I take it that this is the aim of this committee, the investigation of these UFO reports by someone other than, say, the United States Air Force or the press, who might tend to blow it up into some kind of...
That's correct. The Air Force, which would tend to restrict the information, and the press, which would intend to possibly warp some of the facts. We want to get the straight facts to the American people and peoples of the world on what information we have gathered through reliable sources and have had verified, analyzed, and reanalyzed by intelligent people.
Well, once you have this information, how do you get it out to the people?
We have, through membership in the organization, you are entitled to a bi-monthly subscription to what we refer to as the UFO Investigator Reports. Mm-hmm. And in these reports, we mentioned the various sightings that have taken place since the prior report, and no doubt most of the listening audience has read the article, The Exeter Incident, which was publicized in Look Magazine and Pageant Magazine, and we released these photos to the magazines. They were available through NICAP headquarters in Washington.
These photos that went along with the article, this, The Exeter Incident, it appeared in one of the national magazines. Were these photos taken at that incident or some other incident?
This was taken in Beaver County, Pennsylvania. The UFO that is pictured in the upper left-hand corner of the article was not taken at Exeter. These were taken by a junior amateur astronomer in Beaver County, Pennsylvania. We had analyzed the photographs, rechecked them, and our photographic experts had claimed that they were genuine. And we had had them in the UFO Investigator a couple of months prior to releasing them to the magazines, and they, upon acceptance of these photographs, rechecked them and found them also to be genuine.
There were no actual pictures, then, of the UFOs at Exeter?
Not to my knowledge, no. They were seen by many people, but I don't believe they were put on film.
All the more reason, as I have read that article, now talking with you, that I should get my camera out and keep it dusted off all the time, I think, because these things... They don't hang around too long, it would seem.
That's quite true. In most cases, they're usually seen very quickly, maybe a matter of seconds, maybe at the longest, a minute. In some cases, we have records of an hour sighting. But in most cases, they're over unpopulated areas, and as you say, they don't hang around for long, and usually not too much detail is observed. But we have various people from across the country, reliable citizens, reputable people, Arthur Godfrey for one, that has spotted it in his light engine aircraft.
I read somewhere that some pilots for a national airline of some sort, not national airlines, but a commercial airline, had had a UFO fly alongside them for a while.
I mean, this has happened in many cases. The UFO has approached the plane and has seemed to pace it. And it's every maneuver, for that matter. If the plane would try to ditch or go below the UFO, the UFO would seem to cling to its either left or right side and pace the aircraft, I guess, observing it at close range. And upon landing, the passengers of the plane, along with the pilots, have been briefed and interrogated by the Air Force and various other government organizations. And if we're lucky, some of our investigators. But the Air Force would tell the people that were on board the plane that they would report all they could separately in an interrogation interview, but yet none of this was to be mentioned to anybody. Now, our laws in our country certainly do not prohibit people from reporting these things to the press or making them public.
We have mentioned a couple of times already, Bill, in talking that the Air Force tends to hush these things up. We're not casting aspersions on the Air Force. Only,
that's true.
Only by saying that there must be something there. I remember, just a few months ago, I was working here on a Friday night, and the report started coming over the wire service about some sightings out around Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And the Air Force was on it, you know, like that, and said that it was I think they said that Jupiter was laying low in the sky that evening, and people were all looking at Jupiter.
They've had a variety of excuses.
They had to swallow that one within the matter of a half an hour, because then came over United Press International a report from the Kansas City Airport saying that they had picked up Jupiter on their radar screens, and there was more than one.
More than one Jupiter.
More than one Jupiter there.
Either
whatever it was.
Discovery or a UFO.
And then I guess they scrambled some planes, and suddenly they disappeared from the radar screens.
We have a case on record where a pilot was warned secretly by the Air Force of radiation danger. In a startling report just received, according to this article, a former Navy pilot has revealed an Air Force warning that he might become seriously ill after three UFOs closely circled his plane. And during an interview with an Air Force major at Kirtland Air Force Base, strict secrecy was imposed on the pilot, except for his wife, who had to be prepared if he were suddenly stricken. And he was ordered not to tell anyone about the encounter or the radiation hazard. Now, after the time lapse passed in which he would have been safe as far as radiation goes, he decided that if it did present this type of a danger, that the American people should be made aware of it. Therefore, he forwarded the report to us in Washington.
And this is you say it was a Navy pilot?
A Navy pilot, and he was caught by the Air Force.
That he might, and they know nothing about it, though.
No, they certainly would not admit to it, right.
I begin to wonder about all sorts of things. I begin now to check back and say to myself, 13 years ago, did I see something when I thought, well I immediately dismissed as a light passing directly on a north-south pattern over the Hudson River.
You'll oftentimes find this to be true if you bring up the subject, that people who were either afraid to because of ridicule or other reasons, when you get into a serious discussion of this, will either have friends or they themselves have seen these various things. And you say you saw an object over the Hudson River.
Yes, I did. It was about, as I say, must have been about 13 years ago, and I was 19. Let's see, how's my subtraction? 14 years ago, it was the summer of 1952,
mm-hmm.
And I was on the roof of a building, and there were three or four others with me, and it was about approximately 11:30 at night. I spotted this object, as light, I should say, it was an orange-reddish light, down to the south, at that point, you know, low to the horizon line.
I see.
And it was appeared to be headed in our direction as we were north from it, and I thought that it would soon pass overhead and we'll hear the engines. In 1952, there weren't too many jets about.
Mm-hmm.
And
was it moving slowly?
And it was moving very slowly.
Very slowly.
We thought very slowly.
Uh-huh.
Until we soon realized that it was moving at an incredible speed, which we thought was slow at first because it was a lot higher
than you had originally suspected.
Than we had originally suspected. When it got more over us and we started to get fixes on relative objects around us, and as a matter of fact, an airplane I assume to be a commercial airplane, passed over in an east-west direction at about that time.
Give you some idea of the perspective.
And we got some kind of depth perspective. This thing was really way up there.
I see.
Yet the light was very bright.
That's right. If you see a star that is exceptionally bright and somebody asks how far away is it or how far would you estimate it as being, it's hard to say. We usually, on our official report forms, we say a pinhead held at arm's distance. Would it be larger or smaller than, or a pea, or a silver dollar or a quarter, and such references?
Well, this brings to mind something that I have tried to point out to most of the people listening probably know that I'm a school teacher during the day, and I do this on weekends for kicks. And in school, I try to teach my children that this relative sighting business, I give them a close example by asking them to use a quarter or a penny and cover the moon. Try to cover the moon when it first comes up at night, when it's laying low to the horizon.
I see.
And then when it climbs into the sky,
and it's much brighter and yellow around it. Whatnot.
Putting the penny at the same distance from their eye, and then trying to cover the moon.
I see.
And then they begin to see that there is this refraction error because of the Earth's atmosphere, and also the fact that the moon appears a lot larger when laying low to the ground, because of its relative size with houses and whatnot. When it gets up in the sky, you can still cover it with the penny, and yet it's an awful lot smaller to the naked eye.
That's correct.
So you ask people in your reports to make some kind of
a sighting. Report is the exact official report that the Air Force uses. Now, there's another contradiction. If they do not believe in UFOs, why did they go to the extent of forming the organization they refer to as Project Blue Book, which is the secrecy organization that investigates UFOs, and Captain E.J. Ruppelt, who was a personal friend of our director, who is now dead, headed the first Project Blue Book. And they have official report forms, and we utilize the same information that they cover, plus a little bit more. We go into it in a little bit more detail.
In what respect? I mean, what do
you...
Well,
we would ask additional questions as far as the brilliancy of it, let's say, for example, or any noise connected with it, and... it goes into quite some detail, and usually most of the questions that have been added by scientists and people in the investigating end of our organization that they feel is pertinent in comparison to the other sightings that we've received. They feel that this information should be added and submitted along with the Air Force report that we utilize.
Do you get many reports of noise accompanying these?
Rarely. Rarely. Most of the time, there's no noise connected with it unless it is very close to the ground or on the ground. There's a beep-beep type of noise or a poof as it descends or a whoosh as it takes off. But usually there's no noise attached to it whatsoever.
Going back to something you said earlier when we were talking about the commercial airline pilots trying evasive action when something was a UFO was flying alongside, you said something about them observing the aircraft.
Yeah.
I therefore, take that at you, an inference that you feel that there is something in the UFO observing us.
I would assume such. We have not been able to prove that they are manned spacecraft, or for that matter to prove that they're from our galaxy or solar system. However, we feel sure that some of these things may be remotely controlled, but when they measure in thousands of feet in length, we feel sure that any craft that large would no doubt carry the beings that have constructed it.
Well, at about this point, I'm going to throw out at you, and we haven't talked about this before, so this is going to strike you as a surprise, but I've had an idea running around in the back of my head.
A theory?
A theory.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just going to throw it out, and then I would like also to say that the phone number here is Grover 1-1500, and if anyone else has any theories, ideas, comments, or otherwise, please give us a ring, and we will try to talk to you here, either on the air or not, if you wish, and pose the questions to Mr. Donovan here and see what he can give you in the way of answers. My theory, and this is probably too simple, is that, to my recollection, and of course the files of your organization could do a much better job in research on it, but being associated with radio and news media over approximately now 15 years. To my recollection, we get a rash of these at about a, I mean a real rash, we get occasional ones
like
all the time.
Like a wave of sightings?
On about a 7-year cycle. This, to my recollection, has been about a 7-year cycle. Now, then I start thinking to myself, well, where is the nearest star? And you come up with about a 7 light years away.
I see, yeah.
And so my simple theory is that if this is some other being in the universe...
In other words, it'd take them a long time to get here.
It would take them. They can't, if we go along with Einstein's theory of relativity, they cannot exceed the speed of light.
One of our theories is that they are in our atmosphere, that they came here and that they have set up some kind of a headquarters, and that the ones we see are constantly in our atmosphere.
Well, that's possible, too. Maybe
your theory, I mean, to go on with what you've said now, is...
Is that since they cannot exceed the speed of light, if we hold Einstein's theory to be true, we haven't been able to prove it yet. Therefore, it takes them about a... It's about a 7-year trip for them. And then once here, or they make their research or whatever, and then...
Right.
And then they head back, and maybe they have running a shuttle service, so to speak, so that you get these seven-year sightings all the time.
Seems to coincide with one of our...
We have a phone ringing here. Let's see what some people out there have to say. WELKFM. Mr. Donovan, please. Let's see. We have a phone out of in the wrong area right now. Is there something you wanted to ask him? Yes, the 30 foreign countries, yes. This gentleman would like to know whether the governments of these 30 countries from which you draw members for NICAP support the theories of NICAP, or are these just lay people from those countries?
I would say that the majority of the members from foreign countries are just that. They are either scientists or lay people not connected with the governments. But in one case, the Argentine Navy has asked NICAP for help. Now, the Secretary of the Argentine Navy has initiated a new investigation of UFOs, and NICAP has been asked to cooperate with this official project. The request was signed by Lieutenant Commander O.R. Pagani, Argentine Navy, whom the Secretary appointed with Captain Constantino Nunez to investigate UFO sightings, especially those by Argentine Navy personnel. That could answer the question as far as one country goes. As far as how many other governments of various countries are involved, I couldn't at this time say. But the new Argentine project has offered to exchange official UFO information with our organization, following up their Navy reports previously sent to us, which appear in the UFO evidence report, which we put out, along with other verified Argentine sightings. And I believe Chile has a similar policy.
Well, that someone answer your question, sir? You're quite welcome, and thank you for calling. Well, there we have someone wondering about the... Maybe we should get back to this membership of NICAP. How long has NICAP been in being?
They were incorporated in the District of Columbia in 1956 as a nonprofit volunteer organization and a fact-finding organization, as I'd mentioned. And the policies are set by the Board of Governors, prominent scientists, educators, and other leading citizens, and are carried out by our executive staff. Our purpose is to investigate all aspects of unidentified flying objects and to weed out the worthless information, which we have a considerable amount of, and to publicize the reliable data. Our major goal is scientific investigation of UFOs to determine their full significance, and because of the official secrecy, we will continue to seek open congressional hearings to make all the facts public.
In connection with this making all the facts public, I have followed with great interest the various trips of our astronauts into orbit, and mainly, again, being a educator and having use of the television in the school where I am, I try to take my children down if it's time is convenient for them to watch some of these launches, and it helps, you know, to bring home to them some of the scientific theories or principles which we are trying to explain in the classroom. Remember hearing once that one of the, and I don't know which astronaut said it, but
James McDivitt.
Oh, you're zeroed in on what I'm
right.
Getting to. Yes, he cited what he called a bogey.
Right, that's exactly what they referred to it as. Now, The object with big arms seen by astronaut James McDivitt from the Gemini spacecraft on June 4th is still not definitely identified, though it is generally believed to have been an Earth-launched satellite or a booster. Now, the reversal of explanations by the tracking system officials remains a puzzle. The first report given out by NASA, NASA, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, said McDivitt had sighted an object with big arms sticking out and had photographed it from the Gemini 4. The pictures were taken with a movie camera mounted inside the windshield. Now, one of the movie frames released a week later shows an oval-shaped object with a faint tail or light and of light and a fan-like triangular glow. The mystery may have been cleared up. It was disclosed that our Pegasus satellite, which looks like it has arms, was flying over the U.S. where McDivitt says he saw the object. The same explanation was broadcast on other networks, but the Pegasus answer was quickly dropped after fixes by the space detection and tracking system showed Gemini 4 and Pegasus to be 1,200 miles apart at the time of the sighting. Also, it was not revealed that McDivitt had seen the object over Hawaii and not the United States. But within 24 hours, the Air Defense Command publicized, reversed the original tracking report. They reversed their explanation, and the first fixes, it said, were imprecise. Instead of being 1,200 miles distant, Pegasus was so close it could easily be the McDivitt object, which the astronaut had estimated to be 10 or 12 miles away. How did our expert trackers make such a huge blunder? Imprecise is hardly the word for a 1,200-mile mistake. Remains to be seen.
Well, they better start checking the computers, perhaps. I don't know. I would like to ask this. You go back to the point. I threw out my little theory, and then we had a phone call. You say that you feel that they are in our atmosphere.
That is one of our theories. In fact, one of the ones that seems to be holding up. Like you say, if they come from another galaxy, and it's going to take them, in our calibration as far as time goes, years to attain our atmosphere, we feel that the ones that we are constantly seeing in our atmosphere are ones that have come to this atmosphere and have taken up some kind of a headquarters. Now, there's a book out entitled The Hollow Earth, which we do not recognize. They claim that Admiral Byrd went to the North Pole and South Pole and discovered an opening into the center of the Earth where there's beings of giant stature, and that these beings are the ones that man these flying saucers. Now, that is based on one of our theories, but we will not recognize these giants in the center of the Earth, nor will we recognize Adamski's trips to Venus.
Well, what about the other side of the moon that we never see?
Now, this is another strange thing. I had done a tape not too long ago on an article I read in a magazine by Robert Rosenberger, and he mentions that when we sent our scientists to the Antarctica, we answered the question before it was posed. We told them that we were going there for research, resource, and whatnot. However, it was brought to our attention by the Chilean government and the Argentine government that various UFOs had been spotted around the poles in large formations and in rapid succession. And we believed, after tracking and checking our reports, that almost every saucer or UFO spotted was traveling in a north-south direction, we believe from pole to pole. And when they sent these expeditionary forces there from Russia and the United States alike, these UFOs disappeared, and the astronomers and various scientists began to notice changes on the moon's surface. Domes, as they were referred to, canals, craters that hadn't been there before. Now we have a concentrated space effort to get to the moon, and we are claiming for defense purposes. But this scientist that wrote this article mentions that we have intercontinental ballistic missiles now that will reach any country on Earth, and we need not possess the moon to be able to threaten the Earth. In fact, an interspace ballistic missile would take much longer, be more costly to construct, and if it was sent, let's say, by the United States from the moon to hit Russia, it could be destroyed before it even entered our atmosphere. So they believe this concentrated effort to go to the moon is not necessarily for defense or military purposes, but because of exploration and scientific aspects, and possibly to investigate these changes on the moon as a result of possibly driving these UFOs away from our poles. That's another theory.
Well, it would also, many of the, we don't get but fragmentary reports about the Russian lunar probes, but it would seem to me that they've experienced some kind of weird difficulty in making a soft landing.
Mm-hmm.
either their sensing radar as to when to trigger their retro rockets or something seems to be way off, because they had so many that just obliterated themselves upon the moon's surface. And these were tracked. Actually, one of them, I believe, was seen to make impact, or shortly afterwards, the surface of the moon was observed from one of our observatories. And so that either their guidance systems are way off, and if they are, then we really don't have to worry about their ICBMs, or that there's something else fouling up their landing devices there on the moon.
General MacArthur mentioned in the year 1955 that the nations of the world had better unite, because the next war will be an interplanetary war. Now, General MacArthur usually knew what he was talking about, and we were wondering, did he have access to information not available to the average man or the public? Did he have access to this information that the Air Force now has charge of? Did he realize that these things did exist, and that most likely with our civilization the way it was, that our next war could very well have been an interplanetary war? And it was in this article MacArthur had been mentioned that this moon theory is being elaborated upon.
I would like to take another leap at this point and say that I'm willing to accept that there is something out there, and I'm not the only one in the universe, I and my kind, and if we have been observed for this length of time, why the delay in contact?
This is another good question. We don't believe that they are hostile, number one. We don't believe that they're trying to communicate with us. In fact, our space program projected for the next 25 or 50 years would mean that, let's say we were going to venture forth to Mars, have we constructed the necessary craft to do so, we would possibly set up a base station on the moon. And then if we observed a civilization on Mars, be it ahead of us or behind us, I don't think we would land. I think we would pace their aircraft, determine their nuclear capabilities, and if they were just about to our point, determine what kind of a race and what kind of people are going to be joining us out here in the stars, the same as some other aliens from some other planet may be doing to us at this point.
Well, it also seemed to me that if these sightings that have been made and these weird maneuvers reported by commercial pilots, military pilots, of these objects, if they are manned, if we take this as the first assumption, if mm-hmm. they are manned by some living creature and not automatically controlled from without, they have overcome one of our serious problems in space travel and everything else, and that is a gravitational force, or overcoming
they
some
seem
of
to have
Newton's basic laws
gravity.
Of motion.
That's correct.
Because these things will fly at fantastic speeds in one direction and come
and
to
stop.
A dead halt, and then reverse their field.
Or make a right angle turn that would be
right
impossible
angle.
For anybody.
If anything was inside, it'd be splattered against the wall.
That's for sure.
They've obviously overcome something that we have yet to even think about.
They have attacked, or so we thought, our commercial airlines on occasion, and have come directly at the cockpit and the pilots, and they began to bust themselves and thought, well, maybe they only had a couple minutes left or a couple of seconds, and this thing would stop just before making contact with the plane and reverse into a sharp right-angle movement. And we believe that they have either tapped some kind of electromagnetic waves that are existing around the Earth, or they definitely have overcome their gravity problem. And one scientist claims that we should stop spending money on rockets and stop thinking along those lines and start developing some type of a saucer. In other words, these are the shapes of these objects that we are seeing. Could it be that we're traveling along the wrong path? Maybe we're our shape and our object is maybe obsolete and hillbilly as far as they're concerned.
Well, I read a article by someone involved in rocketry now, I believe. I don't want to quote it. I have a name in the back of my head, but I would not want to say that it was he. But it was by someone who is involved in rocketry now, and he said that he was willing to concede that rockets were all right for what we were doing at the present moment, but for interplanetary planetary travel, the saucer was in much better shape.
True.
And that it, because of...
like the teardrop shape and our wings and whatnot.
Yes, because we...
Wind resistance.
We are still basically within our atmosphere, where the basic shape of the wing is important for lift and this sort of thing, but when you get out there where there is no atmosphere and you have other forces to contend with,
sure.
The saucer shape, he said, would be better.
Now, to get back to what you mentioned earlier, Bruce, you said that you saw an orangish red-colored object. Now, there's a theory advanced that when you heat a piece of metal, it becomes a reddish-orange in color, it gets blue as it gets hotter, and then it gets white-hot. Now, when these things have been seen close to the Earth or stopped or have been landed, they seem to be reddish in color. When they're moving slowly, they're greenish-blue, and when they're seen very high, they're bright like a star. So that substantiates that theory, and we haven't had anything so far or thus far to disprove it. And at this time, I had read this before on various stations. I'd like to read a letter I got from Senator Robert F. Kennedy. Now, he quotes, or I quote here, "Thank you for your thoughtful letter on so-called unidentified flying objects. Many reputable scientists agree that there must be other beings in the universe. Dr. Harlow Shapley, for one, has stated that there is a high probability that there is other life in the universe. He also says to believe that there is other life in the universe is not, however, to believe that these UFOs are manned vehicles. One explanation of this phenomenon connects the lights that are seen with the gaseous tails of comets. A careful analysis of sightings to date has not given us any indication that UFOs are manned. I would appreciate hearing from you on this matter and hope you will write again on matters of mutual interest." We wanted to get an opinion from Robert Kennedy before forming our New York subcommittee, which will, under the new policy that NICAP has set, forward reports to him, simultaneously forward them to Washington, that the senators of the various states are made aware of these things so we can encourage these congressional committees to be formed and have open hearings. Many senators have quoted, or we have quoted many senators in saying that they, will strive for this, and a lot of them are members of NICAP. Senator Dirksen has said some very nice remarks in favor of our organization, and he is going to strive for congressional hearings. He says that he does not believe that it jeopardizes the national defense or poses any threat to our security, and that when the facts are made available to the congressional committee, that they in turn will no doubt make them available to the people. But the Air Force's only claim has been fear of mass hysteria. This, again, brings a lot of other things to light. How about if one of these things falls on Poughkeepsie? What will the people think then?
Well, I, for one, will start looking around quickly.
I mean,
for a place other...
Society has taught them these things do not exist, but yet what has landed in Marty Frickert's backyard? And this presents a problem.
I, at this point, would like to ask this question. If someone is interested in learning more about NICAP and UFOs, or if someone has had a sighting, which up to this point they have tended to keep to themselves because they, boy, you should have had your glasses cleaned that night or something on that night. Where can they contact you?
They could reply at my address in Poughkeepsie at 4 Cleveland Drive. Cleveland, as you spell the president's name, C-L-E-V-E-L-A-N-D.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could write directly to the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena in Washington, D.C. at 1536 Connecticut Avenue. I would appreciate hearing from the people that would be interested, sending them the necessary forms and having them complete the forms and send them to Washington in care of NICAP.
What do you see for the future with NICAP? I've got an indication of something there with... obviously, NICAP is about to exert a little lobbying pressure on Congress.
This is true. We've been trying to do this for a long time, and things have begun to break, so to speak. The news media has backed us up tremendously. WEOK, for example, Look Magazine, and various other newspapers and TV and radio shows. Our director, who is Major Donald E. Kehoe, will be on the Mike Douglas show this coming Friday night at 4:30 on Channel 9 for anyone that would be interested in listening to his oration on UFOs. And bear in mind that he represents our organization as our director. And I'm sure that it would be of interest to people that are interested in UFOs or who disbelieve UFOs. I happened to glimpse part of the program on Channel 8 this past Friday, and it seemed to be very interesting. He brings out some pictures that the Air Force has on the subject, and he also talks about the suppression of facts that the Air Force has in their files. And this is what we're trying to bring an end to. We want these facts analyzed by scientists, interpreted by the congressional committees, and then presented to the American people. And we feel that the wide interest and concern expressed by the general public and the news media has precipitated enlightenment in respect to the mystery of unidentified flying objects, and we hope that it will progress, and we have good reason to believe that it will.
Well, on that note, I can only say thank you.
It's been nice being here, Bruce.
And I've enjoyed it very much. I feel better about things that I have had rolling around in the back of my head for years. It's nice to know that I'm not alone, and I'm not thinking, you know, off the deep end. There are obviously responsible people in the United States and in the world who are concerned about this. I have often felt, and I have often tried to say whenever I felt it was necessary, that it's about time, and this is my own opinion again, and doesn't reflect the station and the management or anyone else, it's about time that the human race got their heads out of the sand and began to realize that we cannot think that we are the only intelligent beings in the universe. If you at all go along with the theory of evolution to any extent whatsoever, just mere mathematical chance says that somewhere, someplace in this huge, vast universe, there has to be some sort of an evolutionary pattern that was somewhat close to ours.
Well, I hope we've interested some people in the listening audience, and I hope they'll either contact me in the Poughkeepsie area or write 1536 Connecticut Avenue in Washington. And thanks again, Bruce.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you, Mrs. Donovan, for being so quiet this whole evening. Sat in the back without a sound the whole time.
Very efficient, very quiet.
Yeah.